Vida Blue has joined us on Sports Byline USA. The name of his book is called Vida Blue, A Life. So you go off to the minor leagues. You're signed by the A's. How did you get signed by the A's, by the way? Were there other teams that were looking at you as well?
No, as far as I'm concerned, I just knew that the Oakland A's were looking at me. You know, interesting story, Ron. Buck O'Neill, who was the first Afro-American scout for the Chicago Cubs, saw me pitch in Mansfield, Louisiana. But the A's they had a losing team at that time, and based on the draft, you know, obviously the worst teams draft first. And some kind of way, the area scout in Kansas City was a guy named Ray Swallow, and he came to Louisiana and saw me pitch, and I had a teammate named Jesse Hudson who ended up signing with the New York Mets. The offensive line coach for my high school negotiated my baseball contract. Can you believe that? So the deal was, he negotiated my contract with Mr. Finley. I signed the contract. So for the work that he did for Mr. Finley, for keeping me under, I guess, $100,000, he gives my coach two tickets to the 1968 World Series where Detroit and St. Louis mixed it up, and Bob Gibson struck out all those hitters and did his thing. But my high school football coach, offensive line coach, negotiated my baseball contract.
Were you one of those raw bone kids? I mean, you know, tall, didn't have a lot of experience, weren't quite sure what you were doing on the mound when you were throwing the ball?
I was. My baseball pedigree goes back to my grandfather, who toiled around with the Negro Leagues a little bit. He barnstormed a little bit and played some semi-pro ball around northern Louisiana. But all my uncles were athletes. I had an uncle that went to Grambling. One was a basketball player. Another one played a basketball. Other uncle played football. And my mother's oldest brother was a big-time baseball player, too. So I was a chip off the old block. But my grandfather introduced me to the game. I sit and listen to him, listen to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that's how I became intrigued with baseball and this guy named Jackie Robinson. But all my uncles, who are obviously a lot younger, they liked this guy named Willie Mays. So in my grandfather's household, that thing that occurs now, the Giants-Dodger rivalry, was occurring in my grandfather's house back in the early late 60s and late 50s and early 60s. But I remember him listening to the Dodger games and talking about Junior Gilliam and Campanella and Pee Wee Reese and Wes Parker and all these guys. Then, of course, I knew who Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale were, and those were my people. And Willie Davis and Tommy Davis, and I got a chance to interact with Tommy Davis in 71. He and a guy named Jim Mudcat Grant were on the A's as journeymen, and they kind of showed me the ropes about how to deal with the media and a lot of the social skills that I picked up, good and bad, that I got them from those guys.
When you only spent 1 year in Iowa in the minor leagues?
Yes, I went single A, double A. I went to Birmingham, Alabama, in the Southern League of all places, where we played in Montgomery, Savannah, Georgia. I met two famous people in Birmingham. Mr. Finley was from Birmingham. I met Paul Bear Bryant, and I also met this guy named George Wallace. I want to tell him so bad. You ever sit in the back of a bus, dude? But I didn't tell him that, Ron. I didn't say that.
1970, you get called up by the A's. Uh-huh. September, right? Tell me about that first game, September the 11th, against Kansas City.
That was the game in which I pitched a one-hitter, I believe.
What?
I think Pat Kelly got the hit.
In the eighth inning?
A left-handed hitter of all persons. Yes. And, you know, I'm just trying to get my feet wet and kind of – it's kind of like an audition. You're auditioning for the job. And I think John McNamara might have still been the manager at that time. But he got fired, and Dick Williams came over from Boston. And, of course, he says, I'm taking the best 25 players north with me when we leave spring training in Mesa, Arizona. And I had joined the reserves, and I had gone to Fort Bragg, North Carolina that winter. So come the 71 season, I was kind of like ready to go. And luckily, that was a spot for me, and I made the team out of spring training.
And 10 days later, you pitch again, and it was against the Minnesota Twins. What happened that day?
There was a guy named Herman Killebrew who I decided to be very careful with. After all, I had read his baseball cards, and that, too, ended up being a no-hitter. But I walked Killebrew. I don't know. It might have been this. The third inning or his second at bat. And I'm thinking to myself, Ron, if I don't pitch this guy very carefully, I could lose the game, the shutout, and the no-hitter all in one swing. So he was better off being at first base. But I think the final score of the game was 6-0.
6-0?
Yeah.
What did you think? I mean, here you are. How old were you when you threw that no-hitter?
I was I just had turned 20 that July.
And what are you thinking? Second start, you're throwing a no-hitter?
Ron, you know me. I'm thinking how easy this stuff was that they called the major leagues, you know. I'm thinking, oh, this is a piece of cake. That's all it is, you know. But it was a great time for me to kind of put myself on the map, and it meant that I had a, you know, I was a little bit more high profile than other guys on the 40-man roster that going into spring training during the 71 season. I'm sorry.
Were you nervous?
Right, I was too young. I didn't know to be nervous. You know, when you're that young, you don't know to be nervous that people have their high expectations for yourself. You just go out there and do what you do.
Did you throw the ball 100 miles per hour as it was reported?
99.
Yeah, because Pete Rose said of you one time you were the hardest thrower that he had ever faced.
No, he's talking about he faced Nolan Ryan. Pete's very kind. I threw hard, Ryan, but I don't know how hard I threw. Luckily for me, I ended up having movement on my pitches, and I think that made me a little bit more effective.
And what about the next year with the Oakland A's? That was a very interesting year, was it not for you?
Yeah, like I said, I had gone to a boot camp. I had gone to a basic training to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I went. Finished that and went straight to my mom's house about a week, 10 days. I went straight to spring training, and there was no left-handers on the A's roster at that time, at least not to my knowledge. And I just knew that I was ready to go, and I got the opportunity, and I took advantage of it. And it's something that I wish every player could experience, to be at the top of your game like that, like I was in 71. It was like a magical year to be Vita Blue at that time, and it was a fun time for baseball and the Oakland A's and the East Bay itself.
Yeah, 24-8 was the record.
Yes.
Cy Young Award winner,
thank
MVP
you.
As well.
Thank you.
And also, the thing that jumped out at me when I looked at those numbers was the 24 complete games. Tell me a little bit about the mentality of pitchers at that time when they were pitching about finishing a ball game.
Well, because they didn't have the setup guy at that time. Even though we had a guy named Raleigh Fingers, he would come in and pitch three innings sometime. He didn't come out and just pitch get the last three outs. My pitching coach made us train to pitch nine innings, and that's what I did. And I had in my mind that I was going to go out there and pitch nine innings. I didn't always do that, but my road work in between starts, I did long distance, did sprints and all that stuff that we do, pick up sit-ups and all everything else that they made us do. We didn't have a stationary bicycle. You had to run, run, run. And even though the guys said, well, you don't pitch with your legs, but yes, you do. So, my attitude about pitching was, again, Ron, it was like, it's my game, and I'm going to train to pitch nine innings. And we didn't know any better. They didn't have, $45 million invested in us either back at the time. So if we hurt ourselves, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But now, teams are so conscientious of the investment that they have in their star pitchers. And that's why the pitch count came into being itself. But I just think that guys can complete games if they would be allowed to. I really do.
It's a mental set. I mean, when you pitched – I think of Bob Gibson. If you tried to take the ball out of Bob Gibson's hand, he would deck you.
He was mad.
Yeah,
I've heard stories where, they come out to the mound and say, what do you want? After he said, what do you want with that growl, he was, a Dave Stewart before Dave Stewart was Dave Stewart. And they said, nothing, Bob, just go right ahead. I'll let you finish,
I'm going to ask you about an aspect of your life that not too many people are aware of.
What's that?
1972.
Uh-huh.
You make your acting debut.
With Chef, with Richard Roundtree.
And Jim Brown was in the movie
Black Gun. Yes, that's very good. That is very good.
What kind of movie was it? What was it?
It was one of those B movies along the line of Superfly and Chef and all that stuff. And Chef Comes to Town too, or whatever that thing was. And I had a real crazy scene where I was Roundtree's brother. So we did this at, what's the track in L.A.? Hollywood Park?
Yeah, Hollywood Park.
So I had to spit in this guy's face. I'm like, of all the things I've got to do, could have been jump in a moat or something or have an alligator chase me, but I had to actually spit in this guy's face, which started, the opening scene was me spitting in the guy's face. Then, of course, a stunt double comes in, and I suppose that got my butt beat up and stuff. But we did that three or four different takes. I'm like, man, I can't. But they had a person that had to wipe the guy's face with a towel and stuff, so. That was it, Ron. I'm glad I could pitch.
How many lines did you have in the movie?
I don't know. It was something I spit then, something crazy. But it was just that short part. I taped that and flew back to Oakland that same night. Mm.
Did you enjoy it? did the acting bug guy, because Jim Brown was in that movie.
Yeah, it didn't hit me. I thought I was a baseball player, and I didn't have the the wherewithal to think about, you know, this could be something I want to do once I stop playing baseball. But it was a fun time. It was a fun thing to do, but I don't know. I don't even think I would like doing a reality show right now. That'd be tough to do, where somebody's following you around with the camera and videotaping your every movement and every encounter that you have with people that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, I can't see you as a bad guy. I know your personality too well. Hold on just a second. Vida Blue is with us. Again, you can read all about this, not only his career, but also his personal life, which is an interesting story in itself, in his book called Vida Blue, A Life. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about the 1972 season, because it was one in which he came in conflict with Charlie Finley, the owner of the Oakland A's. And also it was a time in which Bowie Kuhn, who was the commissioner of baseball, stepped in to stop a trade or him being sold to a ball club. So there are a lot of interesting aspects to his professional life, and we'll talk about that as we continue with more of You and Sports Byline.